morning and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C. A civil society group calls on Nigeria's Chief Justice to recuse himself from petitions challenging the outcome of the presidential election.
We are saying that the Chief Justice should excuse himself because, circumstantially speaking, there seems to be conflict of interest.
Millions of Catholics around the world celebrate Easter Sunday.
Catholicism is growing in Africa at record levels, faster than almost any other place in the world, right? In another 50 years, it'll take over, you know, some other traditionally Catholic areas of the world, Latin America, Asia, you know. Africa is on pace to really become sort of a Catholic superpower going into the future.
An activist in Uganda welcomed the rare prosecution of a government minister on corruption charges.
To me, it is not surprising at all, but we also need to know that, yes, he has been taken to court. It's not time for rejoicing yet, because in the country where we are, we don't have a history of convicting actually the ministers.
Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Nigeria, the civil society group, the International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law, or InterSociety, is calling on the Chief Justice, Olukayode Ariwoola, to recuse himself from petitions challenging the outcome of the presidential election. The group contends that there is an appearance of a conflict of interest due to what it alleges is a relationship with President-elect Asiwa Jubola Ahmed Tinubu and a recent partisan statement the Chief Justice is alleged to have made. But supporters of the President-elect have dismissed the allegation, saying this is an attempt by opponents to reduce Tinubu's popularity before he succeeds outgoing President Muhammadu Buhari. Citing voter irregularities and rigging, losing presidential candidates former Vice President Atiku Abubakar and Peter Obi filed court petitions seeking to challenge the outcome of the February 25th presidential election. For more on the call for the Chief Justice recusal, I reach Emeka Umiagbalasi. He is the leader of the International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law, or InterSociety.
Chief Justice of Nigeria, Justice Aliwara, Olukayode Ariwoola, you know, is being asked to recuse himself. Recusing himself, in other ways, to excuse himself from the panel or anything that has to do with dependency of the presidential election petition matter, presently lying before the Court of Appeal and soon to be tabled before the Supreme Court, where he is the Chief Justice. So we are saying that the Chief Justice should excuse himself because, circumstantially speaking, there seems to be conflict of interest. And that conflict of interest emanates from the fact that a strong allegation that he has affinity with the president-elect, Ahmed Bola Tinubu.
But Emeka, some people are suggesting that he is just one of many justices who will be poring over the case and adjudicating the case. So why should he recuse himself because of an allegation of his friendship or affinity to the president-elect?
Well, his own case is particular. He is not just a justice or a serving justice of the Supreme Court of Nigeria. He is the Chief Justice of Nigeria. You get? And again, the allegation, yes, it's a strong allegation. If you look at that statement, we see clearly where we laid out what transpired, the circumstances of the Chief Justice of Nigeria's claim to have traveled to UK on medical checkup for 5 days, how he was with Shiad and all that. And the people that monitored him, you know, traced him to a hotel where He was walking majestically, unaided, you know, contrary to the way and manner he, you know, he was sighted at Nigeria Airport. So all these allegations, and again, the Chief Justice, CJN, has also been accused of making some partisan statements, you know, statements on becoming of Chief Justice of Nigeria. So we are concerned about the fact that he is the primus inter pares of the Supreme Court. He is the general overseer of the Supreme Court. Had it been that he's just a justice of the Supreme Court of Nigeria, we wouldn't have been worried. But for the fact that he is the presiding officer, the general overseer, the Chief Justice of Nigeria, and when the matter comes before him, he is bound to preside over. We are saying, we are telling him prayerfully to recuse himself. So for purpose of principle of natural justice, to take effect.
People are saying the judiciary of Nigeria has demonstrated independence. So by asking the Chief Justice to recuse himself, basically it's a slight on the independence of the judiciary. And that in itself weakens the faith or confidence Nigerians have in the judiciary to adjudicate this case of election dispute. What do you say to that?
I don't want us to stress this matter, but if I may recall, I'm not one of those that believe that the Nigerian judiciary are presently constituted, particularly the Supreme Court of Nigeria, is independent or exhibiting a culture or a doctrine of independence and impartiality and neutrality. If you look at what is going on in Imo State, Southeast Nigeria, where over 1,000 defenseless people, civilians have been killed, and thousands of properties burned. It was as a result of the blunder of the Supreme Court, the same Supreme Court in January 2020, where they went and picked somebody and coronated him as the governor of the state. If you also look at the two recent judgments delivered by the Supreme Court in pre-election matter in Yobe concerning the current Senate president, where the man never participated in the senatorial primary election, but when the matter got to them, they now notified the voting and they gave the man ticket to run as a senatorial candidate in that state.
What if he refuses to recuse himself despite these calls? Then what happens?
Well, I believe that society is being governed by dominant public opinion. If Nigerians have spoken and Nigerians have prayed, Nigeria have not insulted, Nigeria have begged him, because what is in the public opinion matters. And I can tell you that what is in the public opinion now is that the name of the Chief Justice of Nigeria is under threat in terms of integrity and credibility.
Emeka Umeagbalasi is the leader of the International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law in Nigeria. He spoke with me from Abuja. Nigeria's Information Minister Lai Mohammed says the recently held February 25th presidential election was the most transparent, credible, and peaceful. This, despite what he says were reports of pockets of violence and intimidation during the electoral process. President-elect Asiwaju Bola Ahmed Tinubu, a former Lagos State governor and presidential candidate of the ruling All Progressives Congress, or APC, was declared winner of the presidential vote. Former Vice President Atiku Abubakar and former Anambra State Governor Peter Obi have both filed petitions in court challenging the outcome of the presidential election. In a wide-ranging interview, Information Minister Lai Mohammed tells me that President Muhammadu Buhari has kept his promise to leave a legacy of credible elections. Here is the concluding part of the conversation with Information Minister Lai Mohammed.
So, Mr. Minister, what do you say to both the international and local observers? In this case, IEAGA came out with a statement immediately after the elections that they lacked transparency. The European Union and some international poll observers said the elections were not too transparent. How do you juxtapose that?
But the African Union said the election was free and fair, and that 95% of the polling units was calm and peaceful. Now, but to answer your question more directly, that many of these observers came to the election prejudiced. They had been overfed by social media hype, which already gave the elections he gave the victory already to the Labour Party. But they've forgotten one thing, that elections are conducted by real human beings,
right. Not
artificial intelligence. And we challenge anybody who has any proof of fraud to come forward. Mm-hmm. But all we hear are simply whispers. Yes, we had challenges. Some people complained that election materials did not reach everywhere at the same time.
Right.
That when you have 176,846 polling units scattered all over the country, with the kind of topography of Nigeria, where INEC had to use donkeys, human porters, boats, to even get election materials everywhere. I think they should be commended rather than be demonized. So we are glad that the two candidates have gone to the election tribunal, which is where they ought to go. But we are worried that they still incite people to violence. They are calling out people to the streets. They are threatening that this election will be the end of democracy. They are behaving like anarchists and insurrectionists.
Well, some people are saying the government is using that as a pretext to arrest some of the critics or those who are challenging the outcome of the election, and that they were just expressing their freedom of expression just as enshrined, or their opinions as enshrined in the Nigerian Constitution. How do you respond to them?
Peter, no decent country would tolerate this kind of rhetorics. No decent democracy. Small fact, their behavior is so reprehensible. They are so reckless in their utterances. You see, a Democrat should not believe in democracy only when he or she wins elections. The true quality of a Democrat is a person who believes in democracy even when he's losing, when he has lost. And all we are saying, you are free to dispute the outcome of the election, but please come with proof. If you want to destroy democracy in Nigeria because you've lost the election, you're not a true Democrat. This is what we are saying. We're not asking them not to dispute the outcome of the elections. Of course, that's what the election tribunals are for. But anybody who goes through history will come out with the conclusion that this is not only the freest election, but the least violent election. Peter, you were around. I will just start from 1999. In 1999, there were about 80 people died as a result of the elections in Nigeria. In 2003, it jumped to 100. In 2007, it jumped to 300. In 2011, 800 lives were lost. In 2015, 100 lives. In 2019, 150. But these two 2023 elections, only between 13 and 28. So the difference is clear that even in terms of violence, there are only pockets of violence that is not enough to mar or taint the outcome of the elections.
Lai Mohammed is Nigeria's information minister. He spoke with me from here in Washington, D.C. Press conference USA host Carol Castile asked Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs, a Democrat from California with extensive experience in Africa and U.S.-Africa policy, how she believes the United States should alter its counterterrorism policy toward Africa.
I used to work on countering and preventing violent extremism at the State Department, and we looked at all of the various reasons that people or communities were more susceptible to violent extremist groups. And it's often not what you think. It is not poverty. It's not a hatred of the West. It is often very local grievances. It is often about state-sponsored violence against someone, about civil rights, about governance issues. And so, you know, so much of our approach to counterterrorism on the continent has been really focused on the military side of things. And, you know, often these governments will say human rights, but they know as long as they're working with us on counterterrorism operations, we'll probably ignore some of the other things they're doing that we might not like. And so what I think is the most important thing to do moving forward is actually shift this paradigm and make sure that we are prioritizing good governance as the key thing we know will actually address violent extremism. And I'm really excited that the Biden-Harris administration just released their 10-year plan to counter and prevent violence, including highlighting priority areas of Mozambique and coastal West Africa as two areas to really focus on how we're doing things differently. This strategy came out of the 2019 Global Fragility Act that Congress passed. And basically, the idea is that we need to do things differently when it comes to working with these kinds of countries and working on preventing violence. And we need to focus on working together as a whole U.S. government. So making sure that the Defense Department, the State Department, USAID, everyone's working towards the same strategy and the same goal. And we know how everything is interacting with each other, but also really focusing on this issue of good governance and making sure that we are not replicating the failed strategies that we saw used in the Sahel and other places that we know just really aren't working.
That was Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs, a Democrat from California. She spoke with Carol Castile. Millions of Catholics around the world celebrate Easter Sunday, the day Christians believe is the day Jesus Christ was resurrected. According to figures released by the Vatican in October of last year, that cover the year 2021, Africa has 256 million Catholics. That represent about 18% of the continent population, and it's 5.2 million more in 2020. Elise Harris, senior correspondent with the Crux News website, tells viewers Carol Van Damme that in terms of recruiting, Africa is one of the fastest growing continents for Catholicism, something that is not lost on the Vatican.
Catholicism is growing in Africa at record levels, faster than almost any other place in the world, right? In another 50 years, it'll take over, you know, some other traditionally Catholic areas of the world, Latin America, Asia, you know. Africa is on pace to really become sort of a Catholic superpower going into the future. And it's also the place where you see, again, not just, and a lot of that has to do with just, you know, trends in population growth itself, right? The church is growing on par with, you know, the population in on the African continent, but also kind of the church and its evangelistic, you know, activities there. There are a lot of missionaries present throughout various countries in Africa. Mm-hmm. And seeing an involvement of the church at higher levels than almost anywhere else in the world.
But you could also look at that, too, and look at the other side of the coin. It seems like Catholicism is declining in other areas of the world, right?
It certainly is, you know, and part of that, I think, is due to just, you know, demographics. There's just less population growth, particularly throughout the West, what you would think of, you know, in terms of traditionally Christian cultures, and an increase along with that, an increase of secularism. You know, many African societies are still very traditional. They hold traditional family values. And we're not, you know, in the West, we've kind of wandered away from some of that. So all those are sort of factors together, you know, and this is why I think another reason that Pope Francis is so interested in the African continent. He's made it a priority to visit several times now. He just most recently visited in January. He went to the Democratic Republic of Congo and to South Sudan, in part to promote peace, but also to sort of rally the people who are in those countries. I mean, right now, the Democratic Republic of the Congo has some 50 million Catholics. It's the most Catholic country on the continent of Africa. So he really is trying to prioritize this through his own outreach. And, you know, he's calling constantly Western nations to remember their Christian roots and to go back to that. The activity is decreasing in terms of not just the number of Christians, but really those who are practicing. It remains a cultural part of people's lives, but not necessarily in practice. And so that's really where Western countries are starting to fall off the map, is in practice, whereas Africa is growing and is really booming with priests and vocations, and they're sending sort of the excess priests they have to the West. And so now you have the situation where Africans are quite often being missionaries in what are traditionally Christian countries. So it's an interesting dynamic that's really taking shape and is set to increase in the coming years.
Elise Harris is a senior correspondent at the Crux News website, which covers the Catholic Church. She spoke with my colleague Carol Van Damme from Rome, where she covers the Catholic Church and the Vatican. In Uganda, welcoming the rare prosecution of a government minister on corruption charges, but are skeptical other high-level officials will be charged in the scandal. Karamoja Affairs Minister Mary Goretti Getutu was charged Thursday with the theft of thousands of metal roofing sheets meant for poor residents in her community. Uganda's public prosecutor says other ministers implicated in the scheme will be held accountable. For VOA, Halima Thumani reports from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
Mary Goretti Getutu, the Minister for Karamoja Affairs, remains in jail over the Easter weekend after being charged Thursday by the Anti-Corruption Court in Kampala with fraud and causing loss of public property. She was initially denied bail. The prosecutor's office says Getutu, her younger brother, and Joshua Abaho, a senior assistant secretary in the same ministry who is now reported to be on the run, diverted metal roofing sheets meant for beneficiaries under the Karamoja Community Empowerment Program. Karamoja is the least developed part of Uganda, with hundreds of thousands still living in mud thatched houses known as manyatas. The prosecution of government ministers for corruption is rare in Uganda, where stealing and the misuse of public funds and materials is unfortunately routine. As investigations into the scandal continue, nine other ministers, including executive members of the government such as the vice president, the speaker of parliament and the prime minister, are potential suspects. Malo Nagaba, with the Anti-Corruption Coalition of Uganda, tells VOA he doubts the remaining ministers will be held accountable.
In a way, she has been given in as a sacrificial lamb. That doesn't take away her culpability. It has happened before where probably one person or two are taken to court and the others go away scot-free. So to me, it is not surprising at all. But we also need to know that, yes, she has been taken to court. It's not time for rejoicing yet, because in the country where we are, we don't have a history of convicting actually the ministers.
However, the vice president and the prime minister have publicly stated that Getutu gave them the roofing sheets. Agaba says those are flimsy excuses.
If you are a prime minister or a speaker, whatever, and the minister of Karamoja is giving you iron sheets, you think those iron sheets are coming from where? They knew that these iron sheets were for Karamoja, because even information came out showing that they even discussed on WhatsApp and other platforms and agreed how they were going to share these iron sheets.
The Committee on Presidential Affairs in Uganda's parliament is conducting a separate probe. Legislator Jacob Karubanga tells VOA those who benefited from the diverted roofing sheets should not have received what belonged to Karamoja.
If anybody diverted iron sheets meant for a particular group, that was wrong. But to what extent it is wrong is the problem, because on the other hand, those who received the iron sheets in any case are also vulnerable. But it was not meant for those particular vulnerables who received them, the ones that Getutu gave out. The position is that they should have been delivered to the originally identified vulnerables in Karamoja.
Jacqueline Okui, the spokesperson for the Director of Public Prosecution, DPP, says the case is getting the attention it deserves. VOA asked Okui if Getutu was being used as a scapegoat in the scandal.
No, it's just a process. You see, the iron sheet scandal is, I would say, like a big elephant. So it's been decided that it be handled piecemeal. There are other case files for other suspects. which are still being investigated.
Kitutu is expected to remain in custody until her next court appearance Wednesday. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala. VOA.
Stay engaged with VOA Africa. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, comments, or greetings. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
The Islamic State group on Saturday claimed responsibility for an attack on a village in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo that authorities said killed about 20 people. The group claimed responsibility for the attack in a statement on its Telegram channel. The attack, which took place on Friday in Musandaba, a village on the outskirts of Beni, is part of a wave of violence against civilians that the army and local authorities blame on the Allied Democratic Forces, or ADF, a Ugandan group based in Eastern Congo that has pledged allegiance to Islamic State. The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from African Collection. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Israel Adesanya, Nigerian-born New Zealand professional mixed martial artist, beat longtime rival Alex Pereira with a stunning knockout at UFC 287 to regain the middleweight title at the Miami-Dade Arena on Sunday. The Nigerian-born fighter lost twice to Pereira in his kickboxing career and ceded his UFC middleweight belt to the Brazilian when they met again in MMA in November last year. But this time around, the last style bender, as the Nigerian is popularly called, claimed a spectacular second-round knockout to get the better of Pereira at the fourth time of asking.
Alex is a great champion, no matter what. He lost the belt tonight, but he will always be a champion. In his story, I'm the antagonist. In his story, I'm the bad guy. But tonight, it's my story. History!
In football news, Guinea's CS Bensakou Siela and Tanzania's Fountain Gate School were on Saturday crowned champions of the boys and girls competitions at the inaugural CAF Africa Schools Football Championship. The two schools emerged champion at the continental final played in Durban, South Africa. CS Bensakou Siela defeated home favorites Clapham High School on penalty kicks after a 1-1 draw before an enthusiastic crowd of more than 6,000 at the Sugar Ray Zulu Stadium. Fountain Gate had an easier time in seeing off Moroccan side Ecole Omar IBN Khattab 3-0 to cap a wonderful tournament organized by the Confederation of African Football, CAF. The winning teams each received $300,000 after the Motsepe Foundation donated about $10 million in the inaugural year of the Pan-African Schools Competition. Veron Mosengo Omar is the CAF Secretary General.
This program means a world for CAF. You know, they have a lot of functionality there. They used to enjoy football, to have education, and we're using also to vehicle the value of football to our kids.
In women football, the Super Falcons of Nigeria will take on New Zealand on Tuesday, hoping to extend its unbeaten run to 3 games against the World Cup co-host. And now to chess. Officials at the ongoing Kenya Open Chess Championship at the Sarit Expo Center in Nairobi are on high alert after a male chess player was busted camouflaged in a hijab to compete in the ladies' section of the tournament. His shocking victory over Jumba and Shakira saw every Kenyan player question where he has been during other important national chess tournaments. Upon interrogation in a private room by the tournament's official, the university student admitted to being a male. He has since been expelled from the tournament pending disciplinary action. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports.
Would you like to be famous? Calling us on WhatsApp may gain you fame if we play your message on the radio. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. Here's that number again. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Upon the acceptance by President Ruto of Kenya of the calls by opposition leader and former Prime Minister Odinga, who has called for discussions on the problems of high inflation and economic downturn, as well as tackling matters relating to the new independent electoral commission, the stage was set for negotiations between these two sides. Perhaps trying to avoid the open-ended negotiations between former President Kenyatta and Mr. Odinga, which he had opposed, the president narrowly defined the scope of the negotiations he would support. He proposed that a bipartisan committee in Parliament should examine and make recommendation on these matters. Mr. Odinga expressed appreciation for the agreement of the president for negotiations, but he also said that while the negotiations in the bipartisan committee in Parliament should go ahead, matters relating to high inflation and economic problems should be discussed now. It appeared that President Ruto is not prepared to go down that road. A second problem, however, is that the business community has complained that the twice weekly protest organized by Mr. Odinga was impacting negatively on their trade and profits, and have been pressing President Ruto to settle with Mr. Odinga. If it is not possible to do what President Ruto wants, then it would mean some problem. Supporters of the president may worry that a concession made to Mr. Odinga would be a kind of cavening. So while expectations are high, there must be the recognition that the different scope of the negotiation is a red flag. Therefore, Kenya is not out of the Kenya is not out of the woods in dealing with this post-election puhara. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Why you say I did not? If I do, when if I do anything, you Bagunça J'en fais une saga. On s'est connus un jour d'été à Malaga. Y'a encore ton odeur quand je t'ai fait mes bagages. Y'a encore nos deux cœurs suspendus dans les nuages. Je la taquine le matin quand elle se maquille. Elle aime la rumba, nous sur ta kisaki. Donne-moi ta main qu'on danse toute la vie. Dans ce petit village, ay que calor que hay aquí. De Puerto Rico je le mène à Miami. Et mi amor, yo soy Kenji. Je te kidnappe, je t'amène en Gitani. Le matin elle a fait son petit sac à dos pour que je l'amène en balade sur la moto. Je la rassure bébécita morena pour le pire et le mejor.
Jealousy, I see you play. I'm still working real hard on a Saturday. My future. trouble I don't see from my love. Nobody you got tell me how I could put it. Changing low, fast and all it takes. I work and don't play, cause it only pay. You know, say minimum wage, don't be my money. Tell you little small change if you come my way. Changing low.
I was destined to make it, whether you hate it or love it. Yes, I'm blessed, nothing you can do about it. And we know, empty barrels are always the loudest. Got myself a Lamborghini, it's dropping in August. Used to hang around the corner 2003. But Jimmy Deuce, still a yammy, I love on the street. I remember how it hold me to sleep in the heat. Now they gotta pay me just to sleep in a beautiful suite. I thought I told you I was gonna be one of the best. I spoke to B-High, can I get Jay on a text? That's some boss talk, and you can hate on the flex. I don't need a middleman, cause I pay all the checks. Oh, this is heaven to me, I came from nothing. All this money you see, came from rapping. Everybody follow my lead, cause I ain't stopping. Man, they say they're hotter than me, them homies capping. And hey, everything is okay, on the jet to LA. Cause I'm tempted, cause I'm late, and I'm still getting paid. What's the point when you hate, cause I got food on the plate. Think you made a mistake, and I straight half of your fate. Money over, what else? Got the Mercedes for the missus. Dead wounds, but you can see the stitches. Ain't no genie granting all your wishes, you gotta work.
Our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English Service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English Service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Mike Hovey, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, all lizards lie flat on their stomach, and that makes it difficult to determine which has a stomach ache. I'm your host, Peter Clotaire, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.